الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على رسول الكريم وعلى آله وصحبه ومن استنى بسنة يوم الدين. All praise due to Allah and the last peace and blessings on the last Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam and all those who follow the path of righteousness until the last day. This session today being the sixth day in the series of the Dawah training course. And today and the next 2 days following it are dedicated to, you call it tips on Dawah to specific groups. Today is Dawah to atheists, agnostics and deists. Tomorrow is Dawah to Christians, and the following day Dawah to Hindus. Right? So what we'll be doing in all three of these days is basically to look at the fundamental ideas that are held by these various groups, and we'll get something of a direction in terms of how we should approach their ideas, how we should respond to their ideas to help them to understand Islam. Actually, according to your schedule, this lecture is supposed to be given by Sheikh Abdul Rauf, and I was supposed to be giving the one for Hindus on Monday, day after tomorrow. However, I am doing today's, and day after tomorrow, a brother from India will be handling the Hindu section, right? Much more familiar with the terminologies, etc. Inshallah, hopefully he will be able to benefit you more. Anyway, the atheists, agnostics, and deists. If we look in the same section, this section of our book on the of this atheist Dawah, on page 7 of this section, there is a scale where we would put the various sects and religions and philosophies, etc. At the top of the scale we see Islam, and that is where the light is. After that, everything starts to get darker and darker, right? The Muslim sects containing elements of Islam have begun a process of deviation. Christianity and Judaism, the process is going farther and farther away from the light. Then the false religions like Hinduism, Buddhism, Jainism, etc. These are, though they have a concept of God, etc., they are getting farther and farther from the light. Then we have, after that, philosophies like Confucianism, Taoism. Marxism is there, but actually Marxism belongs with the atheists, who come after the animists. We have animists, those who worship spirits of nature, spirits of the trees, of the rivers, you know, anything in nature, they worship God within the nature around them. You know, these people, such people are called animists. Then we have deists, those who say there is a God, but he has nothing to do with us. Then we have agnostics, who say we don't know whether there's a God or not. And then we have atheists, who say there is no God. Marxists can join in with them. And after them, we have Satan worshippers. I mean, you can't get any darker than that, right? So, looking at that whole scale, if we go back to our initial titles, atheism, deism, and agnosticism, atheism is the belief of those who hold that God does not exist. God, in the concept of God, is a figment of human imagination, human collective imagination. People have made up this idea of God for some reason or another. Some of these psychiatrists like Freud and Durkheim, they gave explanations of how the belief in God came. Freud had his theory called the Oedipal complex theory to explain where the idea of God came from. Deism is the belief that there is a God. However, God has no control over this world. He's left it to run on its own. He's not bothered himself with it. It's too insignificant. Just as we have ants living in an anthill who have whole nations living their lives. Ants of all types, shapes, colors, forms. But we as human beings don't bother ourselves with controlling their lives. We could control their lives. Maybe those who are involved in biology, botany, they may go and inspect them. But to say control them, to direct them, etc., we don't bother. They're insignificant. They're below us. So they look at this world and human beings within it in the same way. Because what is this world here but a speck in an ocean in relationship to the rest of the universe? So why would God bother himself with this world? The third category, agnosticism, is a recent category invented by Sir Aldous Huxley, a British thinker, philosopher. He invented the term in the 1900s. And basically, it is in between. It is saying, I don't know whether there is a God or not. It is not possible, really, to know. It is, God is unknowable. If there is a God, we wouldn't know about him. There's no way to know. We don't have the means to know. Some people in modern times go to another step beyond that, saying, well, it doesn't even matter. So what? Even if there is a God. Yeah. But the earlier individuals, their position was a little more philosophical. As G.J. Romaine says, by agnosticism I understand a theory of things which abstains from either affirming or denying the existence of God. All it undertakes to affirm is that upon existing evidence, the being of God is unknown. So, when we look at these three groups, we can say basically, atheism and agnosticism are one and the same. Agnosticism is just another expression of it, right? Expressing that there is some element of uncertainty. We're not absolutely certain there is no God, but there's no way of knowing anyway. So if there's no way of knowing, it's like saying really there isn't in practice. The deist is the one now who has accepted that there is a God. But responsibility to that God, he doesn't accept. You will hear him saying things like, organized religion, I don't believe in it. It's made up by human beings. Too many of them all around the world. Can't be real. God, yeah, it's got to be a God. But organized religion, no. I mean, I've seen too much of human playing with religion to believe that this could possibly be from God. That's usually the kind of statements they make. So, let's start with the bottom. Those who deny God's existence altogether. Usually, their position is one of logic and reason, as they say. To deny God's existence is logical. To affirm his existence is illogical. It is irrational. It is based on blind faith. They'll put this out, you know. Now, you believe in God based on blind faith. This is what people have told you. You believe it and that's it. There's no way you can prove it. It's not provable. Whereas, to reject God's existence, that is reasonable. That is logical. Well, our position is the opposite. To deny God's existence is illogical, unreasonable, and irrational. whereas affirming God's existence is logical, reasonable, and rational. So, how do we establish that? Because you say, well, okay, what's your evidence? Well, first thing, we'll say, if it is an issue of logic and reason, and we look at the state of the world, wherever you go in the world, in every society, there are philosophers. There are people who reflect and think and contemplate. Wherever you go, whatever age you are in, you have people like this. Yet in all of these societies, there is a consistent belief in God. Are you telling me that all of the thinking people, the reflecting people, the philosophers of all of these societies have all accepted the existence of God from their own reason, but you, as an individual, now find it illogical? No, I said it's not likely. It's most likely that you are the one who is functioning illogically. That is what is most likely. And truly, if we go back to the, you know, people who are into logic and reason, they always, from the West, they always uphold Aristotle and Plato. You know, these are the logicians, the thinking, you know, people of the great state that was Greece and Athens and these type of things. Anyway, the point is that, what were their positions, Aristotle and Plato? They believed there was a God, using pure reason, and they were heavily into reason and logic, so much so that they despised experimentation. They felt anything that we need to know about this world, we should be able to come to logically using our own thinking powers. And that's why they ended up with the conclusion that if you dropped a cannonball and a marble, you know, a cannonball, or a cannon, a big, huge, like a bowling ball, if you drop a bowling ball and a marble from a height, the bowling ball will hit the ground before the marble because it's heavier. That's logic. That's what they concluded. And that's what they wrote in their books. And that's what the West believed for 1,000 years. Until finally, an Italian climbed up to the Leaning Tower of Pisa, dropped the two and found that they hit the ground at the same time. Finally experimenting it, trying it out experimentally, right? You know, that was the state of Greek science, logic, reason. And they came to a lot of very, you know, good, useful propositions and thoughts, etc. Anyway, the point is that were it something illogical, then they would not have supported it. Okay, so let's stop for a minute and say, hey, this argument that belief in God is irrational is not correct. Let's look at this thing rationally now. First and foremost, go back again to the world. Everywhere in the world, people have believed in the existence of God. Wherever you go, everywhere. The existence of a supreme being. Everywhere, every corner of this earth. Most people who deny God's existence have always remained an insignificant few. In our times, in the 20th century, we found the rise of a state, Russia, followed by China, and a few other little European states, that took on the state religion of communism, where the denial of the existence of God became statewide. But this is something unique in history. Had never happened before. So you had a large number of people officially holding that belief. But if you went amongst the average Russian and the average Chinese, because these are two big populations, China being about 1 billion people, and you ask them, do you believe there is a God? They will say yes. But they said, but you belong to the Communist Party. You studied in the communist schools. How can you say it? Well, said, if you want to get ahead, that is the line that you have to toe. And I'm just not supposing this. I talked to some Chinese who are communists who converted to Islam, and I asked them, how did you go from denying God's existence to accepting Islam? He said, no, really, we never did deny God's existence. I mean, officially in class, yes, we had to go through the motions. We said, yeah, there's no God, everything. But in our hearts, we knew there was God. Everything told us there was God. So we just did it. We did our exams. We did everything. We carried along, you know, because that was the official line of the state. And if you want to get ahead in the state, then you better toe that line. So we did it. When the state backed off religion and eased up, then you found a huge surge forward in both in Russia and in China, you know, of religious feelings and institutions coming up and all this kind of thing. Why? Did they just come from nowhere? No. Because they were there, just smothered. Right? So even in those states where it had become the official line, it was still a minority of people amongst them who actually believed that line, that God did not exist. And as a general principle amongst anthropologists, where you find a belief amongst people or a practice which is everywhere on the earth, the likelihood is that that is from their nature. It is inborn, not something which they have learned from the society. Because this is the battleground amongst anthropologists. Are certain things from nature or from nurture, is the two terms they use. Nurture meaning you learn it from the society that you're raised in. Some things you can see eating. That is natural. Nobody has to teach you to eat. You're born with a desire to eat. Right? Now the way in which you might cook your foods and prepare them and all that, this is nurture. This is culture. Because you don't just come out of the womb and if somebody, you know, gave you some food to cook, you're going to cook it, you know, biryani, because you're born in Pakistan. No, no, no. You learn to cook biryani because people taught you that. It's not something natural. Right? It's from nurture. So they look at a variety of different practices among human beings and try to put them in different categories like this. So as a general rule, where you find something is from nurture, it is restricted to certain areas of the world. Certain societies, certain communities, certain groups. Whereas the natural things are the things you find everywhere, like people eating, people procreating, people marrying, the variety of these different things. These are things which in fact are from nurture, they're inborn. Marriage usually they put under nurture, but in fact, if you follow their rule, it should be part of nature. Because people marry everywhere you go. The most primitive of societies to the most advanced, marriage is there. I mean, it's only in our times where people are canceling the institution of marriage and, you know, shifting back to an animal type existence. So, we're saying that if that is everywhere, it means it's a part of our nature. It is inside of us. We are created with it. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala actually does speak about that in the Quran. In Surah Al-A'raf, the 7th chapter, verse 172-173, وَإِذْ أَخَذَ رَبُّكَ مِنْ بَنِي آدَمَ مِنْ ظُهُورِهِمْ ذُرِّيَّتَهُمْ وَأَشْهَدَهُمْ عَلَىٰ أَنفُسِهِمْ أَلَسْتُ بِرَبِّكُمْ قَالُوا بَلَىٰ شَهِدْنَا أَن تَقُولُوا يَوْمَ الْقِيَامَةِ إِنَّا كُنَّا عَنْ هَذَا غَافِلِينَ. Right? This is Allah here describing a circumstance. When He created Adam, He took out from Adam all of his descendants. So all human beings came into existence at that point. Allah said when He drew forth from the loins of the children of Adam their descendants and made them testify concerning themselves, He made every human being testify. He said to them, am I not your Lord? Alastu bi rabbikum? And they all bore witness saying, bala shahidna. Yes, we indeed testify to it. And Allah goes on to say, this is in case you should say on the day of judgment, we were unaware of this. So every child is born with an inborn realization of God. And the Prophet ﷺ emphasized that or re-emphasized that saying, كُلُّ مَوْلُودٍ يُولَدُ عَلَى الْفِطْرَةِ. Every child is born with a natural belief in God. But it is his parents that turn him into a Christian Jew or Magian or whatever. Right? So this concept of it being a part of nature is a part of Islamic teachings. Right? I mean, I'm just linking that. Of course, if you're giving da'wah to a non-Muslim, the issue about it being a part of Islamic teachings is not relevant to them. Right? You're just presenting an argument. The argument is that it must be a part of human nature. And in fact, modern science, in 7 years ago in California, researchers studying the brains of people who have epileptic seizures and other problems in the brain where there's overload in the circuits, etc., whatever, they found that there was a place in the frontal lobe where when a person had these seizures and had overwhelming feelings about God, that area became active. Also, when a person just thought about God, spoke about God, that area of the brain became active. So they identified it as the God spot. And they said the brain is apparently hotwired for belief in God. This is from their own, you know, experimental evidence, right? So all of that points to human experience, right? The human conclusion that they exist, that God exists, their likelihood is great. The likelihood of God's existence is great. But if we go further to what we may consider to be actual argumentation for God's existence, the most popular mode, which was used by Plato, and you find this throughout the Quran, is the argument from design. The design indicates the designer. Right? As Allah said, أَفَلَا يَنْظُرُونَ إِلَى الْإِبْلِ كَيْفَ خُلِقَتْ. Will they not look at the camel and how it is created? وَلَى السَّمَاءِ كَيْفَ رُفِعَتْ. Into the sky and how it is lifted up. Into the earth and how it is spread out. And so on. So Allah is calling, asking us to look at the structure of these things. Look at how it has been set up. Is this happening by itself? Or is this proof and evidence that there must be a designer behind it? The argument from design. The ancient Arabs used to say, Al-ba'al yadullu ala al-ba'ir. That dung, camel dung, indicates the camel. Meaning, if you're out on the desert, riding along, and you come across a piece of camel dung, you don't stop to think to yourself, how in the world the sand rolled together by the dust and the wind and some water drops and it formed a clump looking like camel dung? No. You see that, you say, a camel passed by here. Right? That's logic. That's reason. Or, you're walking on the beach. You see a footprint in the sand. You don't stop to think, how amazing the waves came up onto the sand and settled into the sand and made the shape of a footprint. No. You automatically assume somebody walked by there. You know, this is the logic and the reasoning, you know, which takes us from things which have design, etc. We assume that this must indicate there is a designer. Right? Now, the argument of the atheists, how do they usually come with this? They say, no, design is a product of chance. Can be. Yes, that is true. We do recognize, you know, design things are made by designers, but design can also be the product of chance. Have you never taken a bucket of paint, thrown it on the wall, or dropped it or spilt it, and it looks like the shape of a head, or a hand, or a foot, or a camel, or something like this? When it hit the wall, it took a shape which looked like that. Has this ever happened? Yeah, but what do you think? If we took a bucket of paint, we mixed in it, yellow, green, blue, all the colors, and we threw it on the wall, what are the chances of producing the Leonardo da Vinci Mona Lisa? What do you think are the chances? How many times we throw this bucket of mixed paint against the wall? Do you think a time would come when accidentally it would form the Mona Lisa for you? No. No. We reject that. They say no. No. If you have enough buckets, and you have enough time, and you keep throwing, one of those times it's going to happen. The chance is there. We say this is ludicrous. This is ludicrous. Because the chance of it happening the first time, which we'll say zero, is like the chance of it happening the billionth time. Because each time you pick up the bucket, you're in the same position you were the very first time. Chances of it happening? Zero. Right? But that's their line. And how do they express it? Usually they say, if you give 100 monkeys, you put 100 monkeys in a cage, and you give them Arabic typewriters and paper, let them bounce around on the keys with their noses, their elbows, their toes, everything, their, you know, eventually, given an infinite amount of time, one of them will type out the whole Quran for you. From Fatiha to Nas. Of course, any thinking person will say, no way. No way. But this is what they say. This is the example they give, of course, is with the Bible. I'm just using the Quran to make it, you know, more relevant. But it's not going to happen. But that's their way of thinking. Anything is possible, given infinite amount of time, etc., etc. And this is why they don't have a problem with the Big Bang, explaining how we all came into existence. They say this whole world with all of its complexity, the universe, everything from the Big Bang. The Big Bang. What is the Big Bang? A massive explosion. We say explosions produce chaos. They don't produce organization and, you know, system. They produce chaos. So it is like a person saying, okay, we go to the junkyard, the scrapyard, where they keep bits and pieces of cars. Gathered from all places around the world, or in the city or whatever, we put them all there, and we drop an atomic bomb in that junkyard. Right. 1, 2, 3, 1,000, 1,000,000,000 atomic bombs. We keep dropping them in there. You think at any point in time, the bomb will explode, and out will roll a Rolls Royce, door open, key in the engine. Engine purring, you just need to step in and drive away? No. This is something your common sense tells you, no way. Absolutely no way. Bombs produce chaos. They don't produce order. But that is their way of thinking. So, one really just needs to bring to them some examples, you know, to bring this home. Different people of the past have done it in different ways. Sir Isaac Newton, in his time, one atheist was visiting him in his home. He had a model of the solar system, you know, with the sun in the center and the planets around it. It was a mechanical thing. You cranked it up and the planets would move around the sun and so on, so on, so on. So his atheist friend said, oh, that's quite ingenious, wonderful, you know, who made it? He said, nobody. He said, don't be silly. Obviously somebody made it. He said, well, if you find it possible that this whole world, the real world, has no creator, how much more silly is that than what you've just said? Abu Hanifa, in his time, he gave the example, somebody to an atheist, you know, of a ship. He said, what do you think about a ship which travels from port to port around the world, stopping at the various ports, with no captain, no one staring at it, just goes by itself? He said, ludicrous, not possible. He said, well, what is this world? What is this world? But far more complex and in need of one to control it. So, you know, you'll find thinkers of the past have expressed the same idea in a variety of different ways. And, you know, perhaps using some form of imagery, you know, would help that atheist stop for a minute and think, what are the chances of this happening? Now, the Quran uses another line of logic in only a couple of places. Most of the time it works from design, because that is the common point at which people, just using their basic faculties, come to the conclusion they must be a god. But for those who still would even deny that, Allah gives them a clear argument with no way to get around it. He said in Surah Tur, verse 35 and 36, أَمْ خُلِقُوا مِنْ غَيْرِ شَيْءٍ أَمْ هُمُ الْخَالِقُونَ أَمْ خَلَقُوا السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ بَلْ لَا يُقِنُونَ Were they created from nothing? Or did they create themselves? Or did they create the heavens and the earth? Indeed, they are uncertain. Were they created from nothing? Or created by nothing? أَمْ خُلِقُوا مِنْ غَيْرِ شَيْءٍ Common sense tells you, can nothing create something? Can nothing create something? No. If you have nothing, nothingness cannot produce something. That's common sense. Nothingness is nothingness. That's its nature. It cannot produce something. Something has to produce something else. So, okay. If we were not created from nothing or by nothing, did we create ourselves? This is the next option. Did we create ourselves? Is it possible for us to create ourselves? Now, for you to create yourself means you must first not exist. Right? Because to create yourself means you have to come into existence, right? That's your creation. So you have to not exist. Now if you didn't exist, how can you make yourself come into creation? Illogical. We cannot create ourselves. So Allah doesn't even mention the third option. The third option is reality. Someone had to create us, who was not himself created. Because were he himself created, then he would be like us, who created ourselves. So, meaning that he would be in need of a creator. He would be in need of a creator. And if that one who created him was also created, then he would be in need of a creator also, and so on and so on and so forth. Okay? So the point is that there had to be a creator who was not himself created. He was without beginning. That's one of the basic characteristics of Allah. Right? He has no beginning. He has no end. وَهُوَ الْأَوَّلُ لَيْسَ قَبْلَهُ شَيْءٍ There's nothing before him. He is the first. Right? So, that is the Quranic argument. Of course, some people say, well, what if we say that the Creator was himself created, and the one who created him was himself created, and you just keep going back? See, if we look at the world today, we have 5 billion people. Go back 100 years, we had 2 billion people. Go back 1,000 years, maybe we only had 500 million people. Go back 10,000 years, you see the numbers going down, 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 down. That's why the idea of going back to Adam and Eve is quite logical. Numbers going right back down to the basic unit. And that's the way everything else is around us. When you go back in time, with the cause and effect chain, the number of causes are decreasing. You're heading back to a primary cause. So everything goes back to one point. Now that should be the starting point. For them, they say when it goes back to one point, then that one point continues as a line, having one who started it, who started it, who started it, who started it, so on and so on, to infinity. But that argument is a theoretical argument, which doesn't work in the real world. It's based on an idea, a theory about numbers, which we made up. It's not real world. You had other Greek logicians who argued that it is impossible for you to walk out of this room through the door. Why? If the door is closed, they argued, you cannot walk out of this room. Why? Because you have to go, grab the handle of the door, turn it, open it, and get out. So they say, it is not possible for you to grab the handle of the door. Why not? If I walk towards the door, and the door is 10 feet away, I must pass through the halfway point, the 5 foot point, right? After I cross the 5 foot point, I must pass the next halfway point, 2.5 foot point, right? Then after I cross through that halfway point, I must cross through the next halfway point, the 1.25 halfway point. And after that, I must let cross through the next halfway point, the 0.75 halfway point. And you can keep dividing to infinity. So if the distance between here and the door can be divided until infinity, means you can never reach the door. That's it. This is a logical argument. You had a whole school of mathematical philosophy that held this argument. Okay? But the real world is what? We go, we open the door, walk out anytime we want to. Right? That's the real world. But in the world of mathematics, because this is something we invented, isn't it? I mean, we were not born into this world and we saw numbers written someplace, 1, 2, 3, 4. We made up these numbers. So something made up. So once it is something which we have invented, it is something which is not itself a part of the real world. It may describe aspects of the real world effectively and beneficially, and we utilize it, but it is not the real world itself. It is only our invention for numerating, for utilizing the real world. And it has its weakness, because we made it. We made it up. If it was a law, then it is perfect. From us, it is imperfect. And that is the nature of numbers. So, in the same way that is not real, when the people who say that the cause and effect change, creator created by another creator, created by another creator, created by another creator, goes back to infinity, we say to them, what does that mean? It means that it would take an infinite amount of time to get to this point. Wouldn't it? If the cause and effect chain goes back to infinity, it would take an infinite amount of time to get to this point where we are right now. And that is like saying we couldn't get here. Because it would take an infinite amount of time to get here, and we couldn't get here. Just like you can't find the beginning point, you can't find this point here either. So, and that was the argument which was used by Aristotle, you know, the issue of the first cause having to stop at a particular point. But the main issue here is that common sense tells us through reasoning that there had to be a creator of this world. Okay? These are the main points of argument that we can raise with regards to those who deny God's existence or those who have doubts about God's existence. There is another argument that is commonly raised, and that is, where did all the evil come from? Right? That's the other argument. Where did the evil come from? If there is a God, and it is an all-powerful God, and a good God, then where did the evil come from? Why are 800 people dying in Bangladesh floods? Turkey's earthquake, so many. Iran's earthquake. You know, all these different incidents happening around the world. We call them natural disasters, etc. They're evil. Why? If there is a just and a good God, will he allow this to happen? That is the common argument. So this type of situation, when you have somebody in the States, we go back to our power principles. Probe. Find out what brought them there. Usually, when a person reaches this state where they say there can't be a God because there's evil in the world, it's a result of some incident which has happened in his life. In his personal life, something tragic has happened. So you find, you know, he had a favorite aunt, for example. And the aunt used to take care of him and do everything for him, was such a nice person and so. And then they had a car accident and boom, she was killed. Why? Why was she killed? She was such a good person. You know? No explanation. So, the only thing that the person can resort to is there can't possibly be a God for this to happen. Stephen Hawking, the great mathematician, wrote a book on the history of time. Right? His book called The History of Time, you know, most recent. I mean, he's like a Einstein's level, you know, mathematician and thinker. his whole chair of mathematics in Oxford University, big time. Crippled. He's crippled. He's wheelchair. Can't hardly speak. He has to speak through, you know, computer with the aid of somebody touching the keys for him and all this kind of thing. He wrote in his books, the Theory of Time or the History of Time and these other books, you know, raging against God. There can't possibly be a God. There is no God. But before that, he used to believe in God. When he was a young man, you know, in his late teens and that university, he was a good mathematician, he stopped and told all sorts, he believed in God. What happened is that when he got sick, he had a cerebral ailment, some sickness hit his spinal cord and debilitated him, so he just ended up shriveling up into this wheelchair. He just couldn't find an answer for why this happened to him. He went to India to visit, you know, they took him around India, he gave some talks, whatever. He would see all these Indian people, a billion Indians there, living lives that are meaningless, you know, as he could see it, meaningless, just living in a hut, you know, just a little mud hut, meaningless existence, but their health is okay. And here he was, with so much to offer the world, and look what happened to him. Why? What's the reason for this? You know, he couldn't find a reason. So he said, God, there can't be any God here, you know. Well, eventually, you know, he ended up divorcing his wife and marrying his nurse. Right, he found love. Right, when he found love, then you hear his tone changing. Now he starts talking about God again. You know, you see people shifting like this. When life is tragic, there is no God. You know, when things go smooth and better, then yeah, they can deal with God again. You know, so you find him going through this phase, and many others like this. You find people, you know, when tragedy strikes them and they can't seem to find any rhyme or reason, then they turn to this attitude that there can't be a God. I remember the time when they had this, what they call it, mad cow disease. It was rampant a few years back in the UK. Killing cows, they had to kill a whole bunch of cows to stop this disease. And they had this picture, front page news, big picture, of a little girl. She's holding a placard in front of her. On the placard, there is some circles in red, and an arrow pointing to them. And she has written there, "My tears." Right? In other words, her tears have dropped on the placard and she circled them to the arrow there. And she has below it a picture of a young cow, right? Which was her pet cow. She lived on a farm, whatever. She had been at the birth of a cow, a calf, and she nurtured that calf and it became close to it, you know, loving that calf. And then came the mad cow disease and they had to kill her calf. So she had written below it, "Why did you kill my calf, God?" It's the question. That is the beginning of atheism. That's where it begins. Nobody, the family had no answer for her as to why God, you know, let her calf die. So she's questioning God right there. Why my calf? What did he ask? What did he do? He was a nice calf. I loved him. So this is the root. So when you probe into the roots, you find these kind of things there, right? And then you align yourself with the person. You know, you can say, "I can understand how you feel." And also, the great tragedy. It's an unfortunate thing that happened in your life. However, we have to raise that individual up. You know how many cases in your life when bad things have happened, and you said, "Oh man, why did that happen? Oh, terrible." The next day you say, "Oh, wow, this good thing happened. If that thing, bad thing hadn't happened, this good thing would not have happened." Ooh, so many cases of it. All of us experience that in our lives. But we think something has happened to us which is not good, and then we see the benefits from it later. Right? This is real. We all experience it. But he would say, okay, I understand that, yes. But the tragedies, you know, the natural disasters, these huge numbers of people, innocent children dying here, you know, what is the reason for that? We say, "My friend, the fact that you cannot see the reason doesn't mean there isn't a reason. You see, what you are doing is you're assuming, because I can't see the reason, there can't be a reason. But you accept there are many other cases in your life when tragedy happens and it's for a good reason that you found it. You see that happening in many other cases, but you don't want to say from that, then in general, this must be the case. The fact that I don't see the reason doesn't mean there isn't a reason. The lack of knowledge is not itself knowledge. Right? The lack of knowledge, your ignorance, is not knowledge. It's just your lack of knowledge, that's all. You know. And we can give them the example, like, when you go to the dentist, right? Normally, if somebody said, I want to bore some holes in your teeth and stick needles in your gum, please, you know, I am not a masochist. Masochist is a person who likes pain, right? You say, I'm not a masochist. No, thank you, right? Somebody offers to do this for you. Because they use this as a means of torture, you know?
Allah Akbar, Allah Akbar. أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله أشهد أن محمد رسول الله لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله لا حول لا إله إلا الله محمد رسول الله رواية الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله. Just to finish off this example, where we said that people tortured others using drills in the teeth and needles in the gums. However, when you have a bad tooth, you go to the dentist and you ask him to do just that. You ask the dentist to please drill some holes in my teeth and stick needles in my gum. Right? Why? Because you love holes in your teeth and needles in your gum? No. But because from that which would be considered in and of itself evil, there is a benefit. Removal of your cavity, filling it up, preventing greater pain that could come if it were not dealt with. So you take the lesser pain to prevent the greater pain. Right? We do this all the time. Understood? So, now we as an adult can understand that. You try explaining that to a child. A 5-year-old child, you've taken him to the dentist, he has some cavities, dentist has to fix it up for him. Now you try explaining to that kid, listen, that pain you suffered at the dentist, this was for a greater good.
So you witness. Every time you have to take that child back to the dentist, he's going to be fighting you tooth and nail. All he can think of is the pain. All, even though you've understood the greater good, he can't understand it. All he can focus on, or all he can recognize is the pain. Isn't that the fact? Right? So, in the same way, we, in relationship to those things which happen in our life, where we cannot see the reason, we are like the child and the dentist. We're like the child and the dentist. We just can't see the reason. So that doesn't mean there isn't a reason. The other point to note, if we leave the atheist now, and there are some other issues concerning the atheist, I would say that the atheist also, though he says, I don't believe in God, we say, no, really, you believe in God. He says, no, I don't believe in God. The atheist, you do actually believe in God. Because if I ask you, why you are successful today, you are a successful businessman, your life is going well, you got kids, you got money, you got everything that life has to offer. You had a classmate who went to school with you, graduated with you and everything, and he's a failure. Complete and utter failure. Doesn't have a job, he's still looking around trying to find something. Why are you successful and he's a failure? What do you think they're going to say? My hard work? No. Because they know that this person might even have been smarter than you. He'll say, my good luck. Right? It's just my good luck and his bad luck. My good luck, his bad luck. And then if you take that person through his day, from the time he gets up in the morning till he goes to sleep at night, why this, why that, why this, why... good luck, bad luck, good luck, bad luck. Your whole life is governed by good luck and bad luck. Isn't it? The other term for it is fortune. Good fortune and bad fortune. And the term fortune comes from the Greek word fortuna, which is the goddess of good luck and bad luck. So there's your God. Just, you've called it luck and, so you don't have to think about, well, what is my relationship to the God, etc. But hey, there's your God. You have a God too. And that is the nature of human beings, because you have to explain things somehow. And whatever you end up explaining it away with, that is your God. If we go over to the deist who says, God created the world, left it to run on its own. We say, in this world, we value wisdom. We value wisdom, intelligence, common sense, all these different qualities of wisdom, we value them. We feel that a person who has them is greater than the person who hasn't. Does it make sense that the creator of this world doesn't have that wisdom and we have it? So, in our world, if you build a factory needing all kinds of workers, etc., etc., then you advertise for workers and you hired them. But you didn't tell them what the factory produces, what are their job descriptions, and you just sent them into the factory. What do you think is going to happen? Everybody's going to just find his way to his position and get in behind the machine and work it out, and your factory's going to be producing. No, they'll go to the coffee, cafeteria, sit down and drink coffee until somebody comes and tells them what they need to do. That's real. That's the real world, right? In fact, a businessman who did that would be considered stupid, idiotic, foolish. These are the terms we use for such a person, isn't it? Right? A thinking businessman is he's going to tell the people what their job descriptions are, he's going to, describe, the machinery, and they know exactly what to do. He's going to give them their purpose there. So hey, if we can recognize that in a company, surely this world which God created, can we just create it and leave it without explaining the purpose? No. That is a formula for chaos. And we can bring no end of examples to prove that point. Common sense tells us, no, God had to inform us. Then the issue is, how did he inform us? He communicated his will to human beings. Which human beings? Those are the people we call the prophets.
How do we know they're prophets? Look at their message. There are many people who claim to be prophets. Look at their messages. If it is consistent with what one would expect from God in terms of purpose of creation and why we're here and how to live our lives, etc., etc., then this is the evidence for it. We look at the arguments of the various religions. God has given us intelligence to look and to compare and to determine for ourselves what in fact is the religion of God. And of course, God, from the first time He created human beings, He gave them a way they should live their lives. He gave them issues concerning their beliefs, and gave them issues concerning their social life, how it should be organized, etc. That is what we call Islam, a way of life. So, for the deist, it's just really putting things in perspective. Common sense points to the need to know our purpose. Therefore, that purpose had to have been explained. As I said, we can use many different examples to bring that idea across to the individual. And of course, you know, there are arguments about religions. There's so many different religions and so on. So, as you said, where did all these religions come from? I said, yeah, they're of man's making. Yes, when you said religion was made by man, you said, yes, all of them except for one. Right? Islam is the one which was from God. The rest of them are made by men. Yes, human beings made them up. Either they took the original message and they modified it, changed it till they created their own new program, you know, or they made it up from scratch, you know, or what could be called from scratch, from nothing. They're made up, yes, except Islam. What is the proof? Again, you go back and look at what are the foundations, what is the evidence which would support that Islam is from God, and the evidence that these other religions are not. And we just would have to look at the points, point by point, and establish those issues. Hinduism is very easy. If a Hindu reaches that point where he's willing to compare and contrast, very easy.